The power is out, but the waiting room is full. A nurse counts flashlights instead of beds. Outside, floodwater still presses against the clinic doors, carrying trash, sewage, and mosquitoes. Inside, patients wait with fevers, asthma, dialysis needs, insulin that is already warm. The storm has moved on. The crisis has not. Across the Caribbean, Hurricane Melissa did not just tear roofs and roads apart. It exposed how close health systems already were to the edge. Generators fail before help arrives. Supply planes sit grounded by paperwork. Doctors work until they sleep on the floor, then stand up and keep going. Public statements promise control. Internal briefings warn of shortages measured in days. This is the quiet phase after disaster, when cameras leave and consequences settle in. Disease does not wait for budgets or logistics. Neither do people who need care. What happens next will decide who recovers, who leaves, and who does not make it through the weeks ahead. Chapter 1. When care collapses, daybreak comes without power. In several island capitals, the sun rises on hospitals that never closed but barely functioned through the night. Generators hum unevenly. Some wards have light, others do not. Nurses move by memory, counting steps between beds. The smell of disinfectant mixes with floodwater and heat. Hurricane Melissa made landfall hours earlier. By morning, the wind is gone. The damage remains. Clinics closest to the coast are flooded past their thresholds. Paper records float in brown water. Examination rooms sit unusable, equipment soaked and silent. In rural districts, small health posts are gone entirely, roofs peeled away and walls pushed flat. Emergency rooms fill fast, not with dramatic injuries, but with everything that comes after. Asthma attacks triggered by mold and debris, cuts already turning red in the heat, elderly patients who missed dialysis the day before because roads were impassable. Parents arrive carrying children who have not eaten since the storm began. The line does not shorten. Cold storage fails early. Refrigerators that held vaccines, insulin, and temperature-sensitive antibiotics shut down when generators sputter or fuel runs low. Staff mark boxes with tape and handwritten notes. Some doses are moved to facilities that still have power. Others are discarded. There is no time to mourn the loss. There is only triage. Across the region, health ministries begin their first internal counts. How many facilities are operational? How many beds are usable? How much fuel remains? These are not public numbers yet. They move through phones and radios between exhausted officials. Early assessments show damage across multiple islands, not one isolated system. That complicates everything. Supply chains are already strained, ports are damaged, airports reopen slowly. Cargo planes carrying medical supplies wait for clearance that depends on custom systems still offline. Paperwork backs up. So does medicine. Aid is promised in press briefings, but promises do not run generators or replace staff who cannot reach work. At one major public hospital, administrators shut down elective procedures by mid-morning. It is not a decision, it is survival. Operating rooms are repurposed for overflow care. Hallways become treatment areas. Staff members bring mattresses from home. Some have not checked on their own houses yet. They stay anyway. Health workers are stretched thin before the storm. That reality sharpens now. Many live far from the hospitals where they work. Transportation is limited. Fuel is rationed. Some walk for hours through debris to report for duty. Others cannot make it at all. Shift schedules collapse into long blocks of continuous work. Outside the facilities, standing water collects in streets and open lots. Mosquitoes appear quickly. Public health teams know what follows storms like this. Dengue, chikungunya, leptospirosis. The risk clock starts immediately. Prevention requires clean water, sanitation, and vector control. All three are compromised. Water systems are damaged. Boil advisories go out, but many households cannot boil anything without electricity. People use what they can find. Bottled water is scarce outside major distribution points. Clinics report increasing cases of gastrointestinal illness within the first 24 hours. It is early, but it is familiar. Communication is uneven. In some islands, government briefings emphasize resilience and control. In others, officials speak more plainly about strain. Internally, the tone is urgent everywhere. Requests for regional assistance circulate between health agencies. Smaller territories ask larger neighbors for supplies. Everyone is asking the same donors. International organizations activate emergency protocols. Assessment teams deploy. Supplies are staged, none of it moves instantly. Weather windows matter, runways matter, clearance matters. Meanwhile, hospitals operate on what they already had, which was not much. Patients feel the delay immediately. Waiting rooms grow tense. People ask when doctors will see them. Staff cannot give answers they do not have. Security is increased at some facilities after arguments break out. There is fear, not anger, driving it. Fear of being turned away. Fear of not being seen in time. Health ministers appear on radio and television by afternoon. They list damaged facilities and call for calm. They thank frontline workers. They promise coordination. Behind the scenes, they face numbers that do not fit the statements. Fuel reserves measured in days. Medication stockpiles already depleted by routine demand. One senior official, speaking privately, describes the situation as a race against depletion. The storm did not destroy the system in one blow. It weakened every support at once: power, water, transport, staffing. The margin that kept care functioning before is gone. In coastal clinics, cleanup begins even as patients arrive. Staff sweep water out of rooms and hang wet charts to dry. Volunteers bring food and flashlights. Community support is immediate and visible. It helps morale. It does not replace infrastructure. Regional health agencies try to coordinate response across borders. That coordination is strained by politics and logistics. Each government faces pressure to prioritize its own population. Sharing supplies means risking shortages at home. Yet withholding help risks broader regional spread of disease. As night approaches again, generators are refueled where possible. Some fail anyway. Backup plans are improvised. Patients who need power-dependent treatments are moved if transport exists. If not, staff monitor manually, watching for signs of decline. This is the moment after disaster when the headlines fade, but the danger sharpens. The storm created damage. The days that follow decide outcomes. Health systems are no longer just treating patients. They are fighting time, heat, bureaucracy, and exhaustion. By the end of the first day, internal reports circulate with a single repeating concern. Essential medicines will not last through the week without resupply. The admission is not public. It does not need to be. The pressure is already visible in every overcrowded ward and darkened corridor. The storm has passed. Care is still collapsing. Chapter 2: Prevention Under Pressure. The second week after Hurricane Melissa begins with numbers no one wants to release yet. Clinics report rising fevers. Laboratories flag contaminated samples. Vector control teams submit daily logs that show how far behind they are falling. The storm damage is no longer the main threat. Delay is. Public health officials know this phase well. After floods recede, disease moves in. Stagnant water becomes breeding ground. Broken sanitation systems leak into wells and open drains. Prevention requires speed, coordination, and trust. All three are strained. Mosquito control units fan out where they can. Trucks are limited. Fuel allocations prioritize hospitals and emergency vehicles. Spraying schedules are shortened. Some neighborhoods are missed entirely. Health workers mark them for return visits that may not happen soon. Clinics begin seeing patterns. Children with high fevers arrive from the same districts. Adults complain of joint pain and headaches. Doctors order tests they already suspect will come back positive. The difference this time is volume. The caseload rises faster than staff can absorb. Laboratories operate with reduced capacity. Power interruptions disrupt refrigeration. Some samples spoil before processing. Others are delayed because reagents are stuck at ports. Technicians work extended hours to salvage what they can. Results come back late. Late results, slow response. Ports become choke points. International aid arrives but does not move. Custom systems damaged by the storm revert to manual processing. Paper records slow clearance. Medical supplies wait alongside commercial cargo. Officials insist protocols are necessary. Health workers argue time matters more. In one island state, a shipment of water purification tablets sits unopened for 3 days. The paperwork requires multiple signatures. By the time distribution begins, clinics are already treating preventable illness. The delay becomes an internal case study of procedural failure. Hospitals begin cohorting patients. Suspected infectious cases are separated where space allows. Where it does not, curtains and distance are used instead. Protective equipment is rationed. Masks are reused longer than guidelines recommend. Staff understand the risk and accept it. Nurses sleep in empty offices. Doctors rotate through shifts that blur together. Some send their families to stay with relatives inland. Others cannot. Childcare is limited. Schools are closed. The strain is visible in short tempers and quiet exhaustion. International aid organizations issue situation reports. They note uneven impact across islands. Some territories receive rapid assistance due to political ties or logistical access. Others wait. Regional inequality becomes impossible to ignore. The virus does not respect borders, but aid often does. A preventable outbreak becomes the turning point. In a densely populated district, gastrointestinal illness spreads through multiple households. Water testing confirms contamination. The source traces back to a damaged pipeline not repaired in time. Health officials announce the outbreak cautiously, emphasizing control. Community leaders say warnings came too late. Public trust fractures quickly. Radio call-in shows fill with accusations. Social media amplifies frustration. People question why some areas receive spraying and supplies while others do not. Governments respond with reassurances and plans. The gap between message and lived experience widens. Disease surveillance systems struggle to keep up. Reporting from clinics is inconsistent due to connectivity issues. Paper logs pile up waiting to be entered. Analysts work with partial data. Decisions are made with uncertainty baked in. Regional coordination meetings move online where possible. Health ministers share updates and requests. Everyone needs the same things: testing kits, fuel, staff. The pool is limited. Negotiations are quiet but tense. Some islands consider emergency measures, temporary waivers for import clearance, military support for logistics. These decisions take time. Time costs cases. Each day without full prevention coverage increases the burden ahead. Doctors begin adjusting treatment protocols. With certain medications low, alternatives are used. Outcomes are monitored closely. There is no room for error. Chronic patients suffer quietly as acute care dominates attention. Missed appointments turn into complications. Community volunteers step in. They distribute water where trucks cannot reach. They help clean clinics and clear drains. Their efforts matter. They cannot replace systemic response. By the end of the second week, the narrative shifts. This is no longer framed as storm recovery. It is framed as health crisis management. The cause is debated. Some officials point to unprecedented weather. Others point to long-standing underinvestment. Both are true. Neither fixes the present. The question now is not whether disease can be prevented entirely. It is whether escalation can be slowed enough to regain control. Health systems operate in a narrow window. Supplies are arriving slowly. Staff are burning out faster. Behind closed doors, officials acknowledge the damage to credibility. Once trust is lost, compliance drops. Boil advisories are ignored. Spraying teams are turned away. Rumors spread faster than information. The storm exposed infrastructure. The delay exposes systems. Prevention under pressure reveals what was already fragile. The coming weeks will show whether response can catch up or whether the secondary disaster will define the legacy of Hurricane Melissa. Chapter 3: The Long Shadow of Melissa. Months after Hurricane Melissa, recovery is measured in structures that are still missing. Hospitals reopen in stages. Some never do. In their place, temporary clinics stand in parking lots and schoolyards. White tents and modular units become the new front doors of care. They work, but only just. Inside these temporary spaces, the limits are obvious. Fewer beds, less privacy, reduced diagnostic capacity. Staff adjust workflows again, adapting to narrow corridors and intermittent power. Patients adapt too, lowering expectations. Long waits become routine. Missed follow-ups are common. The health workforce changes quietly. Doctors and nurses who held systems together during the emergency begin to leave. Some accept overseas contracts offering stability and pay that local governments cannot match. Others step away entirely, exhausted beyond recovery. Recruitment efforts lag behind departures. Chronic patients feel the impact most. Diabetes management disrupted by months of instability leads to complications. Dialysis schedules remain uneven. Cancer treatments are delayed or shifted abroad for those who can afford it. For many, care becomes fragmented and uncertain. Governments release rebuilding plans with careful language. Timelines stretch into years. Funding depends on loans and donor commitments still under negotiation. Public statements emphasize resilience and modernization. Internally, officials acknowledge gaps between promise and capacity. Tourism declines sharply in several islands. Hotels damaged by the storm reopen slowly. Visitor numbers drop. Public revenue shrinks. Health budgets feel the pressure almost immediately. Emergency funding dries up as attention shifts elsewhere. Long-term investment becomes harder to justify politically. Regional health agencies attempt to maintain coordination. Lessons learned reports circulate. They identify successes in emergency response and failures in logistics and equity. Recommendations are clear. Implementation is uncertain. Political cycles move faster than institutional reform. Community trust remains fragile. In areas hit hardest by delayed response, skepticism persists. People question advisories and announcements. Compliance improves slowly as systems stabilize, but confidence does not fully return. The memory of waiting without help lingers. Mental health needs rise quietly. Health workers report burnout and trauma. Patients describe anxiety tied to disrupted care. Support services exist on paper but lack staffing. Counseling is often deprioritized in favor of visible reconstruction. Education pipelines for future health workers are disrupted as well. Training hospitals operate at reduced capacity. Students experience gaps in clinical exposure. The long-term effects will not be seen for years, but they are already forming. Policy debates intensify. Some leaders push for regional stockpiles and shared emergency response units. Others argue for national self-sufficiency. Funding constraints limit both visions. Climate projections add urgency without adding resources. International partners continue to monitor recovery. New storms elsewhere compete for attention. Aid shifts from emergency grants to development loans. Debt concerns surface. Health systems recover structurally while carrying heavier financial burdens. In communities, recovery looks uneven. Some neighborhoods regain regular clinic hours and water service. Others remain dependent on temporary solutions. Inequality deepens quietly, shaped by geography and influence rather than need. By the first anniversary of Hurricane Melissa, health systems are functioning again, but not restored. Capacity is reduced, workforce numbers are lower, trust is thinner. The storm did not just damage buildings, it altered trajectories. Officials reflect cautiously. Preparedness plans are revised. Procurement rules are reviewed. Training exercises are scheduled. These steps matter. They do not erase what was lost. The long shadow of Melissa stretches beyond infrastructure. It reaches into staffing decisions, budget debates, and patient behavior. Recovery is not a moment. It is a condition shaped by memory and constraint. The storm passed in hours. Its impact on Caribbean health systems will be measured in years.